Well, I guess we'll start something in the beginning. Because after all, you started in the middle. You know, you started in the middle of a lot of entanglement. You didn't have a second of freedom. It was already all worked out. Everything scheduled, alarm clocks, and basically you were trapped. So maybe I'll start at the beginning. I'm thinking of first the Manu Samhita.
It describes how Lord Brahma performs his austerities seated on the lotus, and then Mukha Bahura Padaja, that then the living entities start to take birth from him, and that first of all the Brahmins appear from the mouth of the Lord, then the Kshatriyas from the arms, Vaishyas from the waist, Sudras just from the feet. Then it continues and it says that everything above the belt, right? Above the belt is actually auspicious. So we don't do any below the belt business here in this description. Above the belt, it says the Brahmin is the most exalted because he takes birth from the mouth of the Lord. He's the mouthpiece. Through him, the Lord eats sacrificial offerings. He speaks on behalf of the Lord. He is the upholder of the laws of the Lord. And the result is that it is said he's the proprietor of the entire earth. Everything is his property. Everything is his right. It is said when a Brahmin eats, he eats only what belongs to him. And when anybody else eats, they eat only by the mercy of the Brahmanas, when he allows them to eat, because they are the proprietors. So that's the beginning where the pious souls, the ones who are aligned with the Supreme Lord, they're getting everything. They are the proprietors. And then there are the others, the ones who are denied. And that's really where we already started. We started with people who were already somewhere caught in a network of actions and reactions which bound them. That's what karma does. Karma basically reduces us. It's the well-known story of the yogi and the mouse that was uncomfortable being chased by the cat. Wanted to become a cat. Yogi said, so be it. Cat was not happy. Chased by a dog. Want to become a dog. So be it. Want dog harassed by tiger. Dog wanted to become tiger. Yes, be tiger. Then the tiger licked his lips, wanting to eat the yogi. And the yogi said, Purnamusi kabav, be a mouse again. So basically, we are having so many desires, so many things. But meanwhile, by karma, again and again, we are reduced to the status of mouse. Have you also been there? Me, again and again, again and again, at the height of my glory, reduced. Sometimes it was by flying out of a car. Other times it was something else. Whatever it was, being dumped and ditched by a beloved or something else. Again, a mouse many times. So that's karma. Due to karma, when our our false pride has grown too much when we think, Iswaroham ahambogi, Siddham balavan suki. I am the controller. I am the enjoyer. I am very perfect. I am also very powerful. And therefore, I'm very happy. Just then, bang, cut down again and again. In this way, we see that the living entity is in this world trying to fulfill desires which are not at all working out. Sometimes it works, but many times it doesn't. And then, mostly, whatever you desire in this world, whatever you get, it's always a little less than what you wanted. You know, like the dream prince, he never comes, right? You can wait forever and ever, and he just is not coming. And finally, some guy comes around the corner. He doesn't have a horse. He has cauliflower ears. But anyway, you accept him because you couldn't get a better one. And then you're going to get lots of little kids, all with cauliflower ears. So, reality is always a little less than the dream in this world. Somehow or other, that is the situation. And what can we do? Dream this big, work so hard, and finally, the result. You know, wow. So much endeavor, so little result. Yes, Brahmins are dutiful. I was thinking about that. I was thinking about these Brahmins who live a life of sacrifice for higher knowledge. And I thought of Sudama. Sudama, who lived in great poverty, but he was never lamenting that. Although he was physically weak, although his health was bad, his clothes were dirty and poor and ragged. But his wife was not satisfied, not for herself, but seeing her husband in that condition kind of disturbed her. So she suggested, isn't it that you have a friendship with Krishna? Why don't you go there? And took a while to convince him, because she wanted him to ask Krishna for something, but he didn't quite hear that. All he heard is go visit Krishna. So finally, Sudama went to visit Krishna. He asked his wife to give him something, to take a gift. She went to the neighbors, begged something, got a little chip rice, which he took with him in a little bundle. Once he came to Krishna, he walked into the city of Dwarka, and he was expected that he would be stopped at the gate. But he was not. He was just able to walk right through. No one else could. Not even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva can go through that gate unannounced. But Sudama, because a Brahmana, because the whole world is his property, he can go anywhere he likes. He is not restricted. So Krishna upheld that dharma. And the guards of Dwarka let him in. Then he came, met Krishna. And of course, Krishna received him very nice, embraced him, put him on a seat, worshipped him, Arati, Rukmini, Fanning, and all the other queens, and everyone in the palace was looking, what's going on? Who is this person? He looks so poor, so shabby. But Krishna greatly respected him. And finally, Krishna said, did you bring something for me? And Sudama, no, not really. He was ashamed. He didn't want to offer that dry flat rice. But Krishna snatched one handful and was about to take another handful when Rukmini grabbed his arm. And Rukmini said, no. With her eyes, she indicated, no, it's enough. Right? Actually, she meant the rest is for us. There's hardly any remnants left. She wanted all the remnants to go to all the queens. So she thought, we won't even get one morsel. And then to the servants, you know, this isn't, she kind of gestured, this is not suitable for the Lord. Mm-hmm. But Sudama was very pleased. He never asked Krishna for anything. But Krishna, of course, being all-knowing, knew very well what the situation was, that Sudama didn't desire anything but his wife and so on. So then he gave Sudama, unknowingly, unknown to Sudama, all that wealth. When Sudama returned to his home, he came there, and his home had altered into a palace, his wife, many maid servants, she was dressed like a queen, and he was still looking like the old poor Sudama, and he could hardly recognize his wife. But then she received him so nicely, and then he also, his body transformed and became young. It is said, though, although Sudama got everything, all that wealth, it never for a moment touched his heart. And therefore, Sudama continued to sleep on the ground. He wouldn't sleep on a bed. He just slept on the ground because he didn't want to by any means become attached to this world. Because as a Brahmana, his goal was Aham Brahmasmi. It was, he understood, I'm not this body. I am an eternal spiritual being, and therefore I have no business with all these material goals. And whatever comes, I'll accept. Rich or poor, it's fine. It's funny that those who have this attitude, they have everything. And the ones who want everything generally don't get, generally are deprived. Of course, the play showed the injustice of one who doesn't really endeavor and yet gets everything, and one who endeavors so hard and gets nothing. We see that Hiranyakasipu, being a big demon, is ruling the entire universe. But we should understand, Hiranyakasipu got that due to his previous austerities and pious activity. For that reason, he had performed great austerity. So then he got this opulent position, but it was taken away. Because Lakshmi is chanchalam, restless, and will not stay with anyone except with Narayan or the devotee of Narayan. So desire is okay, but the problem is misdirected desire. That is the issue. Just when we chant our japa in the morning, we also experience the difficulty to concentrate on the name, because our mind is agitated. Our mind is very agitated by so many things. Agitated what all the people that we're with said to us, what they did to us yesterday. Someone who didn't treat us very nicely, still disturbed. Somebody owes us money, still remembering. Oh, what we want to do. Oh, what we hope will happen today. Oh, what we should do to make arrangements. Agitated. It simply means our minds are agitated by the material energy. Wanting to do so many things with that material energy, because the forms, the taste, the touch, the sound, the smell of the material energy has captured our mind. And one who can just switch off, one who can just let go, one who can just say, there's nothing important actually, other than this chanting, he can chant, no difficulty. Then one can chant peacefully and concentrated, because one is not going after these desires. It's difficult. I came up with this idea that a devotee should make a declaration of no faith. a declaration of no faith in sex. Okay? If we could do that, if we would, that's the beginning. It's not the same of having no attraction, but no faith that this will bring us happiness, real happiness. Yeah. So that's, if we deal with the material world, as long as we think that all these things will bring me happiness, yes, then we'll be very agitated by so many things. Therefore, first of all, a devotee has to see these things are actually not bringing me happiness. Yes. Because look at faith. It is said that the living being is anandamaya byasat, by nature, pleasure seeking. So wherever we think that pleasure is, that's where our faith will take us. We think it's money. Then, you know, it's all about money thing. Yeah? Studying finance, finding different ways, investments, how to keep it, how to avoid tax. All these things are very interesting. Right? Interest percentages and all that kind of stuff. Wow, far out. Great discussion topics. You know, read magazines, read the Financial Times and whatever. It's money. Right? If it's sex, then, you know, how do I look? Right? Then, you know, I have to do so many things, right, to be attractive. Oh, yes, impressive, yes. Of the right type of profile. Yeah, that's why if one at one point loses faith in all these things, it's a great relief. There was a time in my life, it's a while ago, but that at 10 o'clock at night, I couldn't go to sleep. There was no question, right? That was like not an option, going to sleep. 10 o'clock at night was the time to go out, right? It's like the time, you know, when it all started, right? And when, you know, see how long you go. And I was restless, and the thought of going to sleep at 10 was inconceivable. And I remember when I got involved with the Hare Krishna movement and I had to get up at 4, I had like a 24-hour jet lag, or basically I used to go to bed at 4 and suddenly I had to get up at 4. It was day turned into night, literally. And night into day. So, first, we change. It's a matter of faith. When our faith is not strong in material happiness, then we become automatically detached. But of course, the mind says, yeah, but give it, of course, material, the mind may say, of course, material life doesn't work. Right? And then the mind echoes, generally speaking. I mean, but it could just happen. Right? It could. Theoretically, it is possible, right, that the perfect, desirable thing will just happen. It's at least theoretically possible. So this hope is still there. And that is why even when we are devotees and we sort of have really intellectually given up on the material energy, still, we're not fully turning to Krishna, because deep down in your heart, but, you know, this little, but you never know. Maybe it's going to work after all, and then what? You know, I'm not going to miss it, you know, like just in case. So I'm giving up the material world, of course. But I keep the back door open, and if there is something, then I could always, really good, then I could always take it. So this level of attachment stays for a long time with the devotee. And in this way, our material desires still remain. Although externally, we give up the material desires, and we Tilak and everything, and Gayatri's and, you know, like Japa and, you know, Hari Bol and, you know, Vanchakalpas and all the right expressions, everything, right? But then that little last bit of faith in the material energy, the hope against hope. And of course, one thing is that everyone in this world, practically everyone, has this deep belief deep down in his heart or her heart that somewhere in this world there is the perfect match, you know? The one person that is like meant for you is somewhere walking around on this planet, and it's just a matter of, well, you know, of waiting for good fortune, right? For good fortune that you might meet that person. Right? So yeah, you know, sannyasis are like here in this material world, and we are known for having a danda, but it's not only that we have a danda, we also have a pin, a little pin. And we use this pin to pop people's balloons. So therefore I must say, you know, that person, that perfect match, that person who compliments you in every way, that person does not exist. 10 second silence. Out of respect for the funeral of our dream match. I'm very sorry. Right. Dead, finished. Illusion gone, completely destroyed. So yeah, you know, if you really want to do it, da 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 da. All right, you know, if you want to do it, then you know it's know it to be a compromise. Marriage doesn't work, right? You have to work for it. If you work hard, right, then there's a chance that it will work fine. Otherwise, as I heard it from my spiritual master, it begins with courting and it ends in court. What can be said, right? No, these things are fine. We're not against anything. I'm not against marriage. I'm not against money. I'm not against pursuing so many desires. But dukavat anyavat sukham kalena sarvatra gabira ramasa. It you get what you deserve by your karma, and that's it. And who has good karma in this age of Kali? Is there anyone who has good karma? I don't. I already have found out that my karma is not that auspicious and bringing plenty of distress and suffering. Amidst the moments of glory and the moments of success, it's never constant. The Brihad Bhagavatamrita also offers us an interesting perspective. It is classifying different living entities according to their relationship with lust or sexuality. They are placed in various positions in the universe. It is said that those who are outright sinful, hellish planets, okay, we leave them there and wish them well. Then those who are inclined towards fulfilling their material desires in an unauthorized way, who are inclined that way, they take birth on planet Earth. See? So the natural tendency on planet Earth is to not follow any rules. But somehow or other, there are rules, and there is a society, and there are standards, and there is morality, and there are ethics, and you sort of reluctantly go, I guess I have to cooperate a bit with these things, I guess. It's too much trouble if you don't. In the heavenly planets, the mood is completely different. In the heavenly planets, the nature of the demigods is to express their material desires according to the rules of Dharma in a prescribed way. And immediately we see they have much better facility than here. Right? Immediately, they get like beautiful bodies. They have wonderful facilities for sexual enjoyment. Right? Then, still higher still than those demigods who enjoy in heavenly regions are the sages who reside on the Maharjanatapa lokas above Swark. And they are the Prajapatis, and they get blessed even with better facilities. They live longer lives. They are getting more blessings. And finally, above there, the ones who get the best positions are those who are following Brahmacharya, who give up sexuality altogether. And they are residing in Tapaloka and in Brahmaloka. So according to one's involvement with sexuality, one is placed higher or lower in the universe. So that's interesting. In other words, somehow or other, Krishna's designed it in that way. Therefore, ultimately, beyond even the best situations in the universe is Vaikuntha. It is said the ladies of Vaikuntha are innumerable times more beautiful than the ones in the heavenly planets, and the ones in Goloka are still innumerably times more beautiful than the ones there. So facility increases as one's focus on Krishna and surrender increases. And that's really the bottom line when we deal with desire. Therefore, desires are there, millions of desires, right? No end. The mind is always agitated by all these desires. And controlling them is very hard, very difficult, because the pushings are so strong, as long as we have faith. Therefore, the first thing to do is to break faith in material things. Just to break that faith. What is so good in the material world? What is so good that doesn't have a shadow side? Just like, the boy who had the most beautiful girl in the world. Lucky fella. Not really. Because naturally, someone who is the most beautiful will be also very demanding. Yeah. So will also be a very difficult person to satisfy. So maybe that's not the smartest or the happiest situation. So look at all situations and see the strings that are attached. So the wise learn to see beyond the surface. The wise learn to see beyond the externals and see what more is attached to all of this. The wise can see in a deeper way. They can see nothing comes alone. Everything has many other things connected to it. You buy the house and then you realize you got to pay tax, water tax. You never knew about it. It's a high amount and you got to pay. And then you find out that you don't owe the land on which the house stands. You're only renting it, and it's not a big deal, small amount. But then suddenly you get a letter in the mail that they are raising the rent to exorbitant amounts, and you're fighting, and you're just entangled in the court, and this whole house becomes hell. Or you get I knew someone who got a beautiful house, the dream house, finally got it. Everything was perfect. And then the Hell's Angels moved in next door. Well, you know, that was it. So the material world creates the most incredible situations. And I used to think that the movies were more extreme than everyday life. But now I know that real life is more extreme than the movies. The most outrageous thing can happen and do happen. Anything can happen, anytime. I have seen, right, myself, quite some extraordinary things happening. I was in a room and in Mayapur, and suddenly it like I heard bang, bang on the wall, and it sounded like someone with a hammer was attacking the wall. And next moment, the floor of the room just burst open from one side of the room all the way to the other side of the room. It took me 30 seconds to grab all my valuables and fly out of the room. I didn't know I could fly, but I could. And I was thinking, now the Godzilla will come out of the crack. That didn't happen. But still, there was the ground burst open. You read about things like that, but you don't think it will ever happen. But it did happen. To me, it did. And so what can I say? So many things will happen. So we have to... We cannot be free from desires. Desires must be there. But we have to redirect our desires. Purify our desires. Connect our... Awaken our desires. How to be Krishna conscious? How am I ever going to be Krishna conscious? Somehow or other, how am I going to push my mind into this narrow mold of Krishna consciousness? It's like, there's so much more, and how can I limit my whole life to just Krishna, Krishna, and just cut everything out? Don't worry, that's not how it works. That's not the process. The process simply, bring Krishna in. Krishna will do the rest. He will take over. Krishna is really all attractive. In the beginning, our eyes may be so covered that we don't see. But then gradually, as Krishna is in our life, he'll start to attract us more and more. Everybody. And as Krishna attracts us automatically, the other desires go away. So it begins with learning to see what is behind everything. See that in this world, happiness doesn't come alone. Happiness is hand in hand with distress. That's the beginning. And then begin to serve Krishna. And gradually, Krishna will capture us. So that's all. Therefore, we also hear about Krishna. Like in the evening, we hear the qualities of Krishna. And for example, when we hear that Krishna is magnanimous or truthful, I missed the first day, so I'm not sure what quality that was. What was it? What? Introduction. But anyway, when we hear these qualities of Krishna, then little by little, one day you hear them again and again, you know. One time you hear from Sachinanda Maharaj, then you hear again somewhere else, then you read yourself, Nectar of Devotion, somehow or other Krishna's qualities. And then one day you actually begin to think, well, actually, Krishna's sort of actually quite nice. I mean, really, if you think about it, you know, it's not bad. A person who's truthful, not only truthful that he never speaks a lie, no, who's truthful in his relationships, who's completely dedicated to his devotees, who's true to his devotees, doesn't betray them under no circumstance. He lies, Krishna. He does. And we do also. Should we give up lying? I don't know if I ever can. to be truthful for a moment. I don't know if I ever can. I've tried, but I still lie. Guru and ISKCON, you'll see it in the next, what's it called? The Back to Prabhupada magazine, you know. See it in big captions, you know. Guru confesses to be a liar publicly, right? Let them print it, the guys, right? Because I'll tell you one thing, these Back to Prabhupada guys are also liars. They are really liars. God, the things they make up, it's amazing. But anyway, leaving that aside, the point is, yes, we'll be truthful, true to Krishna, true to the absolute truth, Krishna. We'll choose for Krishna. At least that will do. With all our defaults, whatever we lack. But at the end of the day, we'll stand up for Krishna. That will do. So we see how Krishna, in the same way, will do anything for his devotee. So in this way, hearing these qualities of Krishna is not just a nice way to pass the evening, but it is gradually developing our faith in Krishna. Krishna is actually nice. Krishna is actually generous. He's actually kind. Like all these qualities of Krishna, there is one story about Draupadi, which I like. And that story is how when Draupadi was being disrobed by Dushasana, then at one point, first she was holding on to the cloth, right? And then she realized, you know, what can I do against this guy? So then she just threw her arms up in the air and called out, "Hey, Govinda." And then Krishna supplied all that cloth. Yeah? And then it says there that Krishna was deeply touched by this attitude of surrender. And then it says in the Nectar Devotion that whenever Krishna remembers Draupadi and how she surrendered to him, then his appreciation for her surrender increases. So that's Krishna. He's very appreciative. You know, he doesn't just appreciate your service once. "Oh, so nice what you've offered to me." He smiles. That's not everything. He is remembering, and then his appreciation is eternally increasing. So gradually it begins to dawn upon us by hearing all these things that, geez, actually Krishna is kind of nice. And then maybe we begin to appreciate him. And then maybe one day we even become attracted to him. And then maybe one day we even develop a little taste. You know, is it possible to hear about Krishna? And then maybe one day all material things look totally empty and bleak and meaningless and a waste of time. I think, like, you know, how could I waste my time with something stupid from this material world? And in this way, we don't have to worry. We just have to add Krishna more and more in our life, and we will become attractive, because Krishna really is all attractive. Believe it or not, he is, and he will. He will get anybody sooner or later. Okay, I have a few minutes left, so any questions, maybe? Any responses? Yeah. When you offend a pure devotee, will Krishna reject? No, Krishna doesn't reject you. No, he doesn't. You'll get maybe a reaction, you know. Daksha got the head of a goat for a period of one kalpa. Only one kalpa. Wasn't so long. Yeah. After that, he could start again. So it's not a problem. You know, you get a reaction for a while, but you're not eternally doomed. There is no such thing as doomed for eternity. That's rejection. See? No. Sooner or later.
You'll get another chance. No problem. Who else?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Prabhupada was speaking about Prahlad. Oh, no, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was writing in a letter about Prahlad and about Hiranyakasipu. And he said, wherever Prahlad looked, he saw the Supreme Lord, he saw Krishna. Wherever Hiranyakasipu looked, he couldn't see the Lord. And Prabhupada said, and we are in between. So, why? It's because, as I said at the very beginning of our lecture, we have turned away from Krishna. We have become involved with the material energy for a long time. And we have become thoroughly, thoroughly covered over by endless attachments that are all still stored within our mind, which we're carrying with us life after life. Because the same mind goes with us as long as we're in the material world. And all the impressions are there in our subconscious. So here we are, you know, like in the conscious, we are Hare Krishna, Hare Bol Prabhu, and Jai Pandavasena Ki, and so on, and, you know, Radha Gokulananda, and Mother Kalangala's birth fees, and everything. And then under the surface, right, the beast is still there. Yes? He's just completely there and waiting, sometimes even roaring, let me out, and other times manipulating. And the more we just establish Vaishnav etiquette in our life, right, the behavior of a devotee, the more the beast is hiding in secret parts of our mind. But still there. Have you heard of yantras? Yantras are drawings, actually. And there's a type of drawing which shows the position of the living being in the universe. And it shows the one circle, shows the... First there's a square, it shows the universe. Then a circle showing the gross body. A smaller circle showing the subtle body. Mind, intelligence, false ego. And then in that subtle body, there is a corner which is known as the cemetery. Yes. So in the mind, there is a dark road. You can go that dark road. It is a narrow path which is at the side of a mountain, a steep drop. You walk that, and there is a corner, a branch sticking out of the mountain with a vulture sitting on it. You'll go past it, turn the corner, and see a lane, and at the end there is a gate. And as you go through that gate, a clock strikes 12 times for midnight. And then you find yourself on a cemetery. And then all the graves are opening. And there come all our hidden desires dancing. most of us don't really want to go in that dark lane. most of us really try to ignore it's there, right? And sort of act as if we are completely pure, right? But the fact is, we still have a whole cemetery out there. And that is why we are not yet so attracted to Krishna, because we are haunted. But Krishna is all powerful, and therefore ultimately Krishna will drive all these ghostly witches away from us over time. No problem.
No. Anyone?
Yeah, so, and it's not only about hearing about the qualities of Krishna and about the pastimes of Krishna, and it's also about doing something for Krishna. Right? When we do something for Krishna instead of for ourselves, right, then we get rid of so many of this darkness that is stored there on the cemetery. So gradually by serving Krishna, all this darkness is removed from the heart. Then we become purified. So Srila Prabhupada established hearing, chanting, but we can't chant and hear the whole day. So also to do something practical. And just by doing things for Krishna instead of for ourselves, we'll automatically become purified and attracted to Krishna. So it's simple, but very powerful. And the funny thing is that when you try it, you're convinced it doesn't work. Okay? You think it works maybe for others, but you feel like it doesn't work. I'm not changing a bit. And I'm not making any advancement. I've been a devotee now for, you know, so many years. I've done this, I've taken this initiation. I've done so many things. But it doesn't work. I'm still totally caught in all my material desires. But it's not entirely the case. The material desires may still be there. They may still be there. And they will stay with us for a long time. But also, some attraction to Krishna begins to develop side by side. We do develop some taste for Krishna. Like before, I used to play electric guitar, and really, like, you know, bhajans wouldn't have been my thing, if you know what I mean. I had another style, so to speak. But now I kind of, you know, don't usually play electric guitar anymore. I kind of like the bhajans. So gradually, things changed. We do develop a taste for Krishna over time, but it seems that the material desires just stay. That's a fact. They will stay. They will not just go away. Everyone hopes that one day they'll just wake up and that all the material desires will have gone away. And when will that day come? No, we actually come to a point where we become attracted to Krishna, still attracted to the material energy. But at one point, we become so much attracted to Krishna that we actually say, okay, then I'll give up this material desire. So we actually have to voluntarily give it up. It doesn't go away. It may diminish to some extent. But at one point, we have to say, okay, forget about it. And until we say forget about it, it will remain. And our absorption will not fully take place. So that's interesting. How we do things for Krishna, and one day we just say, okay, it's not worth it. Forget it. Then we are free for Krishna. Mixed motivation. How can we tell that we do things for Krishna and not for ourselves? That's things for Krishna. You can't just manufacture devotional service. Devotional service comes from the devotees. So the devotees make devotional service available in this world. Therefore, if you want to engage in devotional service, you have to connect to some devotee, and then you take up some service which has been given by the devotees, either in general or a particular devotee, and you do that service. Now, while we're doing the service, you know, we're full of material desires. Like, for example, Ridayananda Maharaj described once how the brahmacharis had a meeting that the ladies in the temple during the kirtan were causing a disturbance. You know, the way they danced and so on. So they decided that ladies should be banned from the temple. And the resolution, they voted, the resolution was passed, and it was about to go when one of them said, "Ho, ho, wait a minute, what are we doing? If we ban the ladies from the temple, who will we have kirtan for?" Right? So, ulterior motive. Externally all for Krishna, internally also satisfying our own desires or pursuing our own desires. Doesn't matter. There's also a percentage for Krishna. Percentage, personal motivation, percentage for Krishna. If we engage in devotional service like that, gradually the Krishna part will take over. Of course, it goes a little slower. Better give it all up, that ulterior motivation. But if we can't, we all come to a point where we can give things up, and then it goes further, and then we come to a point where we just can't. And where we are serving with ulterior motive, and no matter how much we know we shouldn't, we can't stop it. It's stronger than us. Then just engage in service like that, and gradually we'll become purified from that. Like karma yoga is do the things you like for Krishna, but one day, you know, you don't care about the things anymore. You start to care more about Krishna. So in this way, even mixed devotional service with mixed motivation will purify us. No problem. Janmashtami. Eternal. The happiness in devotional service is a gift from Krishna. And devotional service is practiced in two ways. It is practiced in conditioned state and in liberated state, or in the tatastha, or in the sarup laksham, or in the marginal state where we are now. You know, our spiritual body is covered, or devotional service is performed in our eternal swarup. When devotional service is performed in this covered state, when we are now, we are sometimes experience happiness in devotional service, but the experience of that happiness may not be eternal. The benefit of the devotional service is eternal, but we're not feeling the happiness very much. Many times we feel that it's a burden. But we believe that it is the right thing to do, so we go on. And then only after a prolonged time, suddenly we begin to realize that actually, yes, I'm actually advancing towards happiness. But many times, it's a struggle when we are in this conditioned state. Only in the liberated state is devotional service always, from moment to moment, an overwhelming experience of happiness. So, here in this world, gradually, our happiness is increasing. But only in the advanced stages are we really situated in happiness. A lot of devotional service is also performed in our present state out of austerity, somehow or other. Hang in there, somehow or other. Carry on, because we believe in it. We have faith, isn't it? So, but we must persevere, and then we'll come to that stage where happiness will be experienced all the time. That's what I was thinking. And then on these, you know, Srimati Radharani, it is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and this is something I really like very much. It is said that the love of Srimati Radharani is like a mirror, and that that love, the mirror of her love, is reflecting the qualities of Krishna. And any quality of Krishna that is reflecting in that mirror, her love is embracing that quality. And then she discovers a new quality of Krishna, and her love embraces that quality also. And in this way, her love is increasing. And then she discovers a new quality of Krishna, which she also embraces. And in this way, her love is eternally increasing. So in that way, in the spiritual world, the happiness is eternally increasing, because the devotee is just increasingly discovering the unlimited qualities of Krishna and embracing those qualities in love. And that is how our happiness is eternally increasing in the spiritual world. Even starting here, you can say, little by little, we begin to embrace the qualities of Krishna. And our love is little by little beginning to grow and increasing. That is actually what's going on. Oh, you have your finger like... Yeah. Yeah, like the spiritual bank account, the credit is there, but when your bank account is frozen, you can't spend the money. So, you know, our bank account is frozen right now. And by devotional service, it becomes again gradually released, that spiritual credit, that fund, that ocean of happiness. So we can't access it. And that's why we are struggling. In our devotional service, because I think in reality, if I bring it down to practical level of where we are now, 99% of us, or maybe more, are struggling to hang in there somehow or other. So that was I just wanted to bring in the practical element. I always feel if I don't bring in the practical element, then I sort of feel like I'm not dealing with, I'm not giving a message which we can take home. Yeah. If I only go theoretical about the eternal, ever-growing spiritual love and so on, and meanwhile we're here on the ground trying to somehow or other, you know, then I feel I'm out of touch. That's why I always bring in the earthly element, you know. I mean, and part of the earthly element is that I'm 10 minutes over time. I don't know what to do with that. And we started late, so I guess we have to stop it. Huh? Yeah. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Kijaya.
Ki. Sachinam Maharaj Ki. So today we have a really nice day planned. His Holiness Bhaktacharya Maharaj will be coming. And in the evening we have a restaurant dinner planned for everyone. So we'll just go through the schedule.
Okay, so now you all know that you're going to be doing your team services. So tents and banners, if you'd meet in front of the castle, that's the pink girls and the pink boys. The people that are cleaning the guest house, if they meet here in the conference room, that's the saffron boys, the blue girls and the blue boys. Those that are cleaning the prasadam tent are the green girls and the